Chad Halleck here with U.S. Senator Jerry Moran, who visited Beloit on Tuesday last week. The first thing that really caught my attention in your discussion is how you were talking about how Congress has relinquished some of its power over governmental agencies with the continuing resolutions, and that a lot of the problems that exist in the legislature today are because of the divisiveness that exists. People not necessarily supporting a good idea or a good policy based on its own merits, but based on whether or not it came from their side of the aisle. You said in times past that it wasn't so much that way, and it's become that way. Give me an idea of how you think that can be resolved and how you can bring true bipartisanship. You always hear bipartisanship used, and it's almost become a cliche as much as it's become anything else, because in many cases it doesn't seem to exist anymore. How do you feel like we can get back to that?
There are lots of examples in Washington, D.C. in which Republicans or Democrats are working together trying to resolve a problem. But it seems like when we come to the big issues that we've divided up into two teams. There's a Republican team and a Democrat team. And one of the things that I think is particularly troublesome is the Constitution gave the authority to Congress to rein in executive branch actions. And when Congress is so divided, when it's Republican versus Democrat instead of Congress taking care of its responsibilities, then government grows. The executive branch begins to exceed its powers, increase its authority, promotes more rules and regulations, more executive orders, and Congress needs to get back to the days in which we're legislating, and that requires some give and take. Not everybody in the country thinks exactly alike, and the way I look at it is that there are issues in which there's little room to budge, a small number of those issues that are based upon your integrity, your political philosophy, the promises you made. But the vast majority of things that members of Congress deal with, there is an opportunity to find a more common ground. And members of Congress need to make certain that they're paying attention to doing their job, both taking care of their constituents, but also upholding the responsibilities the Constitution gives them. And, you know, I don't know the answer to how we get more, although I think that Congress in many ways reflects much of America, in which it's a much more divided country. And it used to be, and certainly in my younger days, a president was respected, was honored, regardless of their political party, and you tried to work with the president in hopes that good things could happen to the country. And today our country is very divided. It was with President Obama, continues to be a kind of a different divide with President Trump. And again, we need to make certain that the American citizens are insisting that their legislators, their members of Congress, in many instances where it's possible, find common ground. We spend more time on the political game or the game of politics than we do on negotiating or discussing and finding a solution.
Again, I'm here with U.S. Senator Jerry Moran of Kansas. Thank you, Senator, for being with us today. Another thing I wanted to ask you about, Senator, was the ongoing conflicts in the Middle East. President Trump authorized missile strikes on Syria here in the past week, and I wanted to know whether or not you were in support of that action. And also, I read a story today that President Trump announced that he doesn't have any plans to ask for any further military action or boots on the ground, so to speak, in Syria. And how do you see the best way to resolve that ongoing conflict? And then I'll have a follow-up for you after that.
Well, I would say that it's appropriate for the United States and others to respond because of the use of chemical weapons. That's a violation of an international agreement. It's a violation that the Russians made to get those chemicals out of Syria. And certainly President Trump had said things that the use of chemical weapons crossed his red line. And it compares with President Obama, who said something very similar and didn't respond. And we lose great credibility when a president speaks for the United States saying that if something happens, there's going to be consequences if there are no consequences. And over time, our enemies aren't scared of us, don't respect us, and our allies are uncertain as to whether we will be there. So I think once the president said if chemical weapons are used, there has to be a consequence. And so I'm not second-guessing the use of those Tomahawk missiles. But I would say that the challenge in Syria is related to ISIS terrorists, and those folks do want to end our way of life, kill Americans. But before any decisions are made about any kind of additional military response, I would want to see what the plan is, what the strategy is, and I would want not only Congress consulted, But under the Constitution, it's Congress who has the authority, the responsibility of declaring war. And Congress needs to have that debate. We don't put our military men and women in harm's way in a nonchalant, happenstance fashion. And we've seen how long it takes to get out of Iraq, how long it takes to get out of Afghanistan. We see when there's no strategy what happens when we intrude into Libya. The chaos continues, and the results aren't what we want. So before we head down any further military action, I think there needs to be a major discussion about how to win, how to succeed, what victory looks like, and whether we have the capabilities of doing so.
Well, your comment about how do we succeed and prevail in that area has led me into another question I have. But just real quickly, I know that being in the position that you're in, that you're privy to information that most of us may not have access to at the level that you would. And amid conflicting reports, depending on what media outlet, like you talked about, which media outlet you listen to and which kind of slant that they have, there seem to be conflicting reports as to whether or not it was actually President Assad that administered those attacks or not. And do you feel confident in the intelligence that says that he was the one that administered and was behind those chemical weapons strikes that took place in Syria last week?
At every step of the way, everything that I know currently tells me that Assad, his government, is responsible. And I suppose that's a continuing opportunity for our intelligence services to verify that. But Assad is the one who has the reason to do so. I'm happy to be proven wrong, but at this point, this is what our intelligence services believe.
In terms of the overall conflict in the Middle East, you know, you can win a war of weapons. And in many cases, these conflicts are, you know, somebody's shooting back, and that's the way wars are fought, even though it's being done now in a much different way than it has been historically, where you never know from one minute to the next who's the enemy and who's not. It's not like everybody lines up on the battlefield anymore, and this side has their uniforms, and the other side has their uniforms. It's a very different type of warfare that we're seeing here in the last 10 years of the 20th century, now into the 21st century. How do you win a war over ideology? You can fight against another person with weapons, but how do you use that effectively to combat ideology that may be contrary to yours? My example would be the Civil War. When it was fought, it ended slavery, but it didn't defeat the ideology of racism that existed, that allowed or made people think that slavery was okay in the first place. Kind of like in the conflict now, you know, you can win a battle on the field, but how do you overcome in the long term an ideology and not just end up mired in conflicts to just bounce around from Iraq to Iran to Pakistan to Syria, Afghanistan, or any other place throughout that region? How do you win that battle, Senator?
That's a great question, and it's a very difficult challenge our country faces. And what I would say is, I'm not of the view that we are the policemen of the world. It's not the United States' responsibility to engage in places around the globe. And the Middle East is a perfect example of places that are so difficult to change. Attempts have been made over time, and we can't combat the generations, the thousands of years of what has transpired in the Middle East or some other country. So I'm less interested in trying to do regime change, trying to determine who a country has as their leader. Where I think we have a role to play in the Middle East is to defeat ISIS. And I don't know that you can defeat their ideology. You defeat them in the battlefield. You defeat them by their death. And that sounds harsh, but this is an organization whose goal is to cause death to Americans. The number one primary responsibility under the Constitution for the federal government is to defend our nation, and we face tremendous challenges. And it's not only the battlefield and winning in that sense, it's our intelligence services knowing what an attack might be, what it would look like, how to prevent it, how to respond, and those are very difficult and challenging things. It's a different kind of war than you, as you say, lining up on the battlefield and having it out. So nothing easy about that, which is all the more reason that we need to save our efforts and not engage in things that drag us down over a long period of time. We need to save our attention and efforts at trying to defeat the terrorists who want to kill us. Who is the leader of Syria is a less important issue if it isn't related to the terrorism, ISIS, and an organization that is out to kill Americans.
Well, how would you respond then, Senator, to those who would say that the actions that we take in that part of the world and our overall policies going back several decades actually embolden and in some cases help to create organizations like ISIS and embolden their recruiting efforts?
Well, one of the issues that I'm involved in regard to trying to make the world a safer place, it's also the humanitarian right thing to do, but if we want to have a better opportunity to live as Americans without being the enemy of others, I'm involved in efforts in regard to food aid, hunger. As a Kansan, I worry about the grain piled on the ground here in the United States, certainly in our state, when we know that people are starving and there's famine around the world. So in my view, we need to be a good neighbor. It benefits us both economically in getting grain consumed. It benefits us in our relationships, and it presents us the opportunity to do good and for America to stand for what's right. So, again, I don't disagree. As we involved ourselves in Iraq and Afghanistan, we created additional enemies. The issue here now is to deal directly with those who want to kill us and try to get us ourselves out of being the policeman or the person that the country that everyone comes to solve their problems. They need to solve their own problems, with the one exception is we are in a war with a group of terrorists.
One final question for you, Senator. Again, appreciate your time. We're here with Senator Jerry Moran on the road today on his listening tour across the state of Kansas during a break in the legislature in Washington, D.C. And my final question, Senator, would be, do you feel like there is a double standard in the media in terms of how military action is perceived and how it is portrayed based on politics? Whereas, you know, for the past several years, we've had military operations of some form or another, whether it be troops or airstrikes or drone strikes during the course of time that President Obama was in office, than we were when President Bush left office. And every day on the news, when Bush was in office, it was always news about the war, news about military strikes. And those were much quieter during the Obama administration. And now President Trump orders those Tomahawk missile strikes on Syria, and it's the top story at the top of the hour for 72 hours in a 24-hour news cycle. So my question is just, do you think that there's a double standard in that? And I make the joke that I told a friend of mine that grew up in San Francisco and now lives in Kansas that is very liberal, that was just beside himself when President Trump won the election. And my comment to him was, hey, look on the bright side. At least you get to be anti-war again.
I don't think anybody that is at all neutral or even a partisan on either side of the partisan divide would think that our media calls it straight down the middle. There are some in the media who try to do that, but it's, in my view, become more and more rare. When I was a kid growing up, I listened to watch the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. In my view, he told us the news. And when he retired, I learned he was very liberal in his personal views, in his philosophical point of view, but I never saw that in the news. And I miss the days in which journalism was about just telling the story and letting people decide based upon the facts. And so I long for the days in which there is a lot less media bias. We're all human beings, and we bring to our jobs the flavor, but there are way too many people who try to influence us based upon how the news is reported.
Well, I, for one, miss the days when we all could seem to agree on what the facts actually were.
You know, that's interesting, Chad, because I think one of the most challenging things that every American faces, and including me in my job, who's telling us the truth? What are the facts? And there's lots of sources of information today, but it doesn't seem to help us know what the truth is.
Senator Jerry Moran, thanks again for your time, and we appreciate it as always. And safe travels, and hope everything goes well on the rest of your listening tour. When are you heading back to Washington?
Thanks for the opportunity to have the conversation, and it was great to be in Beloit and North Central Kansas yesterday. I have a few days off this week and a few days off next week before I return to Washington.
Good luck between now and then and on your return to Washington. Again, Senator, thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you again later.
Thanks so much.